morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 17, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Separatists are accused of waging war on education in Anglophone Cameroon.
They have burned, destroyed, damaged, and looted scores of schools and used schools also as their bases and camps to store weapons, ammunition, to torture and hold their hostages.
But the separatists say the report is inaccurate. Rights groups say Amhara forces in Ethiopia committed atrocities in Tigray. UN envoy meets Libyan Joint Military Committee amid strong tensions in Tripoli. And the deputy law mayor of Kampala City says Ugandan security agencies are violating the rights of citizens.
What has happened to Bobi Wine is not a scenario. It has been used on former FDC President Dr. Kizza Besigye. It has been used on the Lord Mayor and several MPs that oppose Mr. Museveni.
And a Zambian lawmaker is ejected from Parliament for wearing the Muslim top. Those stories plus something Omani sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Human Rights Watch says separatist attack on students, teachers, and schools have had a devastating impact on children's right to education in Anglophone Cameroon. In a new report, the group says it documented 260 abductions of students and education professionals since 2017, and the killings of 11 students and 5 teachers in the Southwest region. Human Rights Watch says separatists have also used school buildings as bases for storing weapons and ammunition, as well as holding and torturing hostages. Ilaria Allegrozzi is a senior researcher at Human Rights Watch and author of the report. She says regional and international partners should urge the Cameroon government to investigate and prosecute attacks on education and provide forensic and justice system support.
Our recent report documents systematic attacks by armed separatist groups on students, teachers, and schools in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon since 2017. These attacks are serious crimes and jeopardize the future of thousands of students. Separatist groups have enforced a perverse boycott of school. They have killed, beaten, abducted, threatened, and terrorized hundreds of students and teachers. They have harassed and intimidated families into keeping their children out of school. The separatist fighters are conducting a brutal campaign against education. They have burned, destroyed, damaged, and looted scores of schools and used schools also as their bases and camps to store weapons, ammunition, to torture and hold their hostages. Attacks on school students and teachers in the Anglophone regions have had a devastating impact on education. According to the United Nations, some 700,000 students are currently out of school. Separatist groups are conducting a brutal campaign using education as a weapon to achieve political gains, and so they are robbing an entire generation of children of their fundamental right to education. They should immediately stop interfering with children's education and announce an end to the school boycott.
Thank you so much, Ilaria. I've just spoken with a spokesperson for the separatists. And one of the things he said is that Human Rights Watch doesn't understand the dynamics of the conflict and the fighting going on in the Anglophone region, and that your report is not accurate.
We have sent letters with our preliminary findings to 4 major separatist groups, and they have replied, denying in different ways the responsibility for attacks against education. But our evidence shows the opposite, that they are responsible and should be held accountable. I think that when they claim that we don't understand the conflicting dynamics at play in the Anglophone regions, when they claim that our findings are biased, they forget that they have praised our research in the past when it highlighted abuses by the government forces. I also think that by accusing Human Rights Watch of biases, they are only trying to intimidate us, and with us, many other brave human rights defenders in Cameroon, as well as students and teachers who have dared speaking out about their abuses.
Ilaria Allegrozzi is the senior researcher at Human Rights Watch and author of the new report. A spokesperson for Cameroon separatists say a new report by Human Rights Watch accusing the separatists of waging war on students and education professionals in Anglophone Cameroon is inaccurate. In the report released on Thursday, the group says attacks on students, teachers, and schools have had a devastating impact on children's right to education in Anglophone Cameroon. But Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-declared Republic of Ambazonia, says Human Rights Watch does not understand the dynamics of the fighting in Anglophone Cameroon.
James, I will say that Human Rights Watch report, again, they don't get the dynamics. And number two, their reporting is not accurate. Now, if you go to Ambazonia, you find out that in the rural areas, most of the towns have been deserted. In my county of the Bialam, for example, no school exists there because nobody lives there. The French Cameroon government has actually pulled out over 700 teachers from the whole county, not because of attacks on those teachers and schools by Ambazonian fighters, but because when the military moved in, set up camps, the population left and they left with their children. So people are not going to school in Ambazonia. That is only because with the presence of the military, there is insecurity. And parents decided to pull their children out of schools, send them to city areas where there is now overpopulation. When I mentioned dynamics, I was talking about the fact that you go to Ambazonia, you have forces, the so-called vigilante groups that are sponsored by elite of the French Cameroon government to counter Ambazonia restoration forces. Now, those people go out and they cause atrocities and they are labeled or attributed to Ambazonia Restoration Forces, whereas they are illegitimate fighters owned by government elites. This is what Human Rights Watch doesn't take into consideration.
You mentioned people not going to school. The report says that your group has enforced a school boycott. In fact, it's calling on you to end this so-called boycott of schools.
James, again, that is not accurate. At the beginning of the conflict, yes, we had a school boycott policy that lasted only for the very first year. The subsequent years up to this moment, we passed the responsibility to the parents to decide. We told the parents, if you deem it safe and secure for your children to go to school, let them go to school. We told the school proprietors, if you think it is safe for you to open your doors for children to come in, do the same. That has been our policy for the past 4 years. And so the idea that there is a school boycott policy instituted by the Ambazonian interim government, again, it is not accurate.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia. In Uganda, the deputy law mayor of Kampala says it is a violation of rights if security agencies are used to prevent unarmed citizens from carrying out their constitutionally guaranteed right of assembly without violence. Doreen Nyanjura's remarks come after parliamentarian Bobby Wine, also known as Robert Chakulai, tweeted earlier this week that his home was surrounded by the military and police, preventing him from campaigning ahead of the upcoming by-election in Kayunga. Supporters of the government reject the accusations of intimidation and harassment. Kampala Deputy Law Mayor Nyanjura tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the human rights situation in Uganda is getting worse.
So what has happened to Bobi Wine is not a new scenario. This same old intimidation method has been used on other leaders in Uganda. It has been used on the former FDC president, Dr. Kizza Besigye. It has been used on the Lord Mayor and several MPs that oppose Mr. Museveni. So there is nothing new. And of course, this is meant to intimidate voters. When voters see their leaders home being surrounded, most of them will shy away from going to cast their votes. So, but of course, we know when we participate in this election, it's not that we are sure we are going to win 100%. It's not that we expect the exercise to be free and fair. But some of us look at these elections as one of the liberation front that we can use to sensitize the masses, that we can use to expose the military junta. So there's nothing new.
Some people are expressing concern that it appears that Bobi Wine or Robert Kyagulanyi, the parliamentarian and presidential candidate of the NUP, threatened national security, for which reason the government had to act.
How does Bobi Wine, who is unarmed, with his supporters who are unarmed, become a security threat? That is a very lousy excuse. This is just a saying that Mr. Museveni and his ruling party, they know very well that Ugandans are tired of them, and therefore they can only use guns and bullets to intimidate Ugandans so that they rig their way into power. There's nothing that Bobi Wine can do. He's an innocent citizen. He's not armed. That doesn't make sense.
So what would you say has been the human rights situation in Uganda this year?
Well, we don't have any human rights in Uganda. We don't have any human rights. Our rights are not respected. Those rights are only reserved for those that support the current regime. A few days ago, we saw some NRM supporters marching to the embassy to protest the sanctions that are against one of the army commanders that has been torturing Ugandans. So we don't see any human rights, given what has happened to us, and of course, given what we continue to see. I don't know if you have been following debates, but currently the head of state has been calling for the scrapping off of bail, you know. And we know that is meant to target his opponents, because this is not the first time he's calling for the same. So we don't have any human rights, because even when you go in courts of law, the courts will not decide, minus getting a call from Mr. Museveni. So I have not personally witnessed any human rights being respected. The human rights have been violated through and through.
Doreen Nyanjura is the Deputy Lord Mayor of Kampala City. She was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 17. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch says forces from Ethiopia's Amhara region have committed a series of atrocities in the neighboring Tigray region. Gelmo Dawi reports from Addis Ababa.
According to the two groups' reports released Thursday, Amhara region militia forces are carrying out mass detentions and killing civilians in western Tigray. Jean Mariner, director of crisis response at Amnesty International, says the new onslaught of abuses by Amhara forces against Tigrayan civilians remaining in several towns in western Tigray should ring alarm bells. Mariner also called on immediate intervention to prevent further atrocities on ethnic Tigrayans in detention facilities. The rights groups say they learned of the atrocities from victims, witnesses and residents of western Tigray. The rights groups say Amhara region police officers, police militias and a civilian militia group known as FANOS have systematically rounded up Tigrayans in towns of Adebay, Humera and Rawayan since early November. According to the report, the Amhara forces are also involved in looting shops and villages. Witnesses say the forces also shoot locals when they attempt to flee. Both rights groups called on the Ethiopian government and its allies to stop targeting civilians, release the detainees, and allow humanitarian agencies access to western Tigray. They asked the international community to put pressure on the government and pave the way for international investigation. Amnesty International says it has sought a comment from Ethiopian authorities on the matter, but got no response. Western Tigray is a disputed area between Tigray and Amhara regions. Amhara forced entered this fertile area following the outbreak of hostilities between the federal government and the Tigray forces in November 2020. On Friday, the United Nations Human Rights Council will hold a special session on the situation in the northern Ethiopia following the request by the EU. But Ethiopia objected the move and said the decision is politically motivated. Gelmo Doit for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
A militia blockade of the interim government's headquarters in Tripoli appears to have ended on Thursday, despite strong tensions in the Libyan capital just over a week before scheduled presidential elections. UN envoy Stephanie Williams met with a 5+5 military committee in the coastal town of Sirte on Thursday afternoon to try to ease any violence which might jeopardize the elections. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
UN Special Envoy to Libya, Stephanie Williams, met with rival political and military forces from eastern and western Libya in the port city of Sirte Thursday afternoon, hours after an Islamist militia group ended its siege of interim government headquarters in the capital, Tripoli. Tensions reportedly remain high in Tripoli just over a week before scheduled presidential elections. Islamist militia commander Salah Badi issued a video statement late Wednesday threatening to scuttle the planned December 24 election and claiming that he will throw UN envoy Williams out of Libya. The head of Libya's High National Election Commission, Imad Asaya, told journalists several days ago that preparations for the election are continuing on schedule. He said that he affirms to the Libyan people and political leaders that his committee will not ignore its obligation to hold free and fair elections, respecting the rights of all parties involved. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV, however, reported that another member of the commission called the December 24 election date wishful thinking. Libya analyst Aya Burwaila tells VOA that fair elections are possible provided that candidates who violate the UN roadmap and the electoral law are removed from the list of candidates and foreign monitors are sent to polling stations to minimize the appetite of militia cartels in Tripoli who are hostile to elections. One former UN Libya envoy, Lebanon's Tariq al-Mitri, told Arab media that the only way to stabilize Libya is to dismantle the militias causing havoc in the country. Burwaila agrees, arguing that such militias are likely to attack and intimidate voters. Libyan Shiites are fed up and determined to exercise their basic right to choose their own government and take their country back after 7 years of foreign-appointed rule and militia occupation. However, Libyan analyst Azadine Nagil told Al Arabiya TV that he thinks both Russia and Turkey are unlikely to remove their militia forces from Libya until they achieve their strategic goals, which will likely involve tough international negotiations. The leaders of two of Libya's closest neighbors, Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune and Tunisian President Kais Saied, met Wednesday to encourage Libyans to vote. Tebboune insisted that it is up to the people to decide their fate. He says that the solution in Libya is in the hands of the Libyan people, and they must get rid of mercenaries and foreign forces and deal with each other. Libya's parliament is due to meet in the eastern city of Baida early next week to make a final decision on whether to hold the election as scheduled. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Zambian independent member of parliament Munir Zulu says he was ejected from parliament for wearing a top, which is a long-sleeved gown-like garment worn mostly by Muslim men. The deputy speaker of parliament says Zulu's attire violated parliamentary dress code, but MP Zulu says his constitutional right of freedom of religion and expression were violated.
James, let me mention from the onset that the standing orders 206 that our guiding principles as members of parliament are very explicit in what we wear. And I was on firm grounds being backed by standing orders 206. And it was quite unfortunate that the presiding officer decided that I should remove that attire. James, I should make mention that if we peruse through our standing orders, the person that had violated the dress code today was the member that rose to ask the speaker to have me booted out, because for a lady, she should put on a jacket all times. Unfortunately, she wasn't. So to say that I was not well-dressed came as a shocker. We have seen the sultans, the kings of Saudi Arabia, attend the United General Assembly in a robe. So I do not understand whether it is my constitutional rights of right to religion that has been infringed. I'm not sure. So that is my thinking.
Honorable Zulu, are you aware that there is a dress code for parliament? And do you think that you have violated that particular code?
James, I'll be very explicit with you. If you look at the standing orders, they give us a traditional regalia that is allowed. So I'm shocked that mine was not treated as a traditional regalia. Neither was it treated as an executive attire, maybe because we are still wearing clothes that were left with us by our colonial masters. That is my submission to you.
Do you see what happened in Parliament with you as a violation of your constitutionally guaranteed freedom of religion and expression?
I must mention, indeed, my religious liberties were suspended at that particular time. And you see, our democracy does not allow you to respond when the presiding officer has decided. She took a position and I couldn't challenge it. And my thinking is we've had diplomats paying a courtesy call to His Excellency President Hakainde Hichilema in that particular regalia, and I've never been booted out.
Monian Zulu is an independent member of Zambia's parliament. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the latest confirmation coming from the Cameroonian FA, the FECAFOOT, and the Confederation of African Football, CAF, that the 2021 African Cup of Nations will be held on schedule, with the African Cup of Nations set to start in less than 1 month on the 9th of January 2022. Several rumors surged suggesting that the tournament might be postponed or even cancelled. This is due to the fact that several European clubs are reluctant to let their African players travel to Cameroon, mainly due to fear of them contracting COVID-19. In a joint statement, CAF and AFCON said that despite the dangers of COVID-19 and its variants, they are taking all necessary measures to protect fans, officials, and players from contracting COVID-19. Fans won't be allowed to access stadiums where the 2021 AFCON will be played unless they are vaccinated and present a PCR test taken within 72 hours or an antigen test taken less than 24 hours before the match. Samuel Dindone is the governor of the Littoral region. He insists Cameroon is ready for the tournament.
Mr. Osengo, who came to see how far Douala is preparing the AFCON tournament, and he just expressed his satisfaction about what we have done till today.
Meanwhile, Jurgen Klopp, manager of the English Premier League side Liverpool, says he will not attempt to replace Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane and Naby Keita in the transfer market when they go to play in the African Cup of Nations in January. The Reds' boss could be without at least two members of the trio for a month from the start of January.
Yeah, we knew about the African Cup of Nations, that's true. So we knew that they all will be qualified and will be there. And we know that at least two of them will go pretty far in the tournament. So all these kind of things we knew. Can you be prepared for something like that properly, like perfectly? Like a 1-1 replacement for Sadio, 1-1 replacement for Mo, 1-1 replacement for Naby? That's tricky.
Staying with the African Cup of Nations, Morocco national team manager Vahid Halilhodjadj has issued a threat to all players who will rather remain with their clubs instead of joining the national team for the 2021 AFCON. Despite
Despite the threat from European clubs, Coach Vahid expects players to respect their international duties and join the national team or else they won't get called up again. The Moroccan coach insisted that any player who fails to honor a national team call-up has shown that he isn't loyal enough to the national team and can as well say goodbye to the national team. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.